Okay, this is Thursday, June 23rd, 2004. My name is Lee Hansen, and I'm doing an oral history project on the Industrial Relations Research Institute, which will be closing as of June 30th, 2004. I'm going to do a number of interviews in the next few months or whatever, and I'm going to begin with Charlotte Frascona, who has been the administrative assistant here at IRRI's since 1996. And so, tell us a bit about your background.
I have a PhD in English from the University of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And my background at UW includes many years as a teaching assistant and a project assistant. While I was a graduate student, I also worked as an editor at the UW Press for a while. And worked in student academic affairs in the College of Letters and Science. I was hired by the Industrial Relations Research Institute when Paula Voos was the director. This was in June of 1996, so it was almost exactly 8 years ago. And at the time, the position was an 80% position. My title is Director of Student and Administrative Services, and it's actually a position that has three parts. One component is serving as graduate advisor for master's and PhD students. The second part is basically running the graduate program, running the day-to-day activities of the institute and collaborating with the director on everything from fundraising to staffing to making sure the timetable is printed correctly and keeping track of financial business. And the third part of the job is doing outreach work with alumni and prospective employers of the IR students. Can we stop it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Well, I guess I can. Hold on just a moment here. There's a, yeah.
I've always worked in the social science building in a lovely office on the fourth floor overlooking the lake. And I've worked for a number of people since being here. As I said, Paula Voos was the director when I was hired. Sue Guess was the office manager. Deb Torgerson was the graduate coordinator. And a young woman named Beth, whose last name I don't recall, was the student assistant. After Paula left, and I believe that was in 1998, she went to Rutgers University, and Craig Olson took over as director. Craig then left to go to the University of Illinois in 2000, and Herb Heinemann took over as director. Then John Witte was director, and now Chuck Halaby.
How long was Herb? How long was Craig a director?
Oh, Craig was director in 99 and 2000, mm-hmm. And then Herb was director from fall 2000 till spring 2001. John Witte was director summer 2001 until. Summer 2002, I believe,
mm-hmm.
And then Chuck Halaby took over as director from 2002 till the present.
Mm-hmm. Good. So basically, we've had a whole series of one-year directorships.
Several one-year interim appointments.
Right.
Partly because of these resignations. When Paula left initially to go to Rutgers, she was a visiting professor there for a year, and there was a chance she might have come back, so the position sort of had to remain open. And then Craig was being courted by Illinois for quite some time before he ultimately made the decision to go there. And then there were a couple of interim directors, Herb and John Witte, who were serving as director while the institute was searching for someone permanent.
Right. Okay, what seemed to be the big issue, big problems, or whatever, when you arrived and when you took this job? What seemed to be the dominant concern?
When I took the position, there were concerns about not having tenure granting authority.
Right.
That I gather has been an issue for quite some time. My understanding is that it was difficult to hire faculty because industrial relations always had to be in a partnership with another unit that had permission to hire. And once that partnership was established, the other department needed to recruit somebody who had IR interests.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that meant if we were working with history, history had to find somebody who wanted to do labor history,
right.
Or sociology
right.
had to find somebody who was interested in economic sociology, or econ had to be hiring somebody who was a labor economist. And it was, and if we were lucky enough to get somebody who had both interests in the primary department that would be that person's tenure home, and also an interest in industrial relations, IR would not be able to grant tenure to that person, although the Institute might have a voice in supporting that person's application for tenure. But if a new assistant professor were to come along and were getting tenure, say, in sociology, it would really be important for that person to be working hard in SOCH and making sure that the publications he or she had
mm-hmm.
were valued by people in sociology, and it was just very hard. I think, I mean, if I were trying to get tenure in one department, but were teaching in another one, you know, your loyalties are split, and the work you do for the non-tenure granting program is not necessarily going to be valued by the people who are in a position to decide on your tenure. So it always made it difficult, I think, for the Institute to build up its strength, because it wasn't in a position to take the lead on hiring.
Right. And you mentioned some other concerns.
I think another concern when I was brought on was that more and more students were interested in human resource management and fewer students were interested in unions and collective bargaining. And I think that's partly because unions in the U.S. have decreased in numbers and perhaps decreased in importance in the private sector,
mm-hmm.
although they're more in the public sector. The program in the past had been, I think, more vibrant and more, there had been a more even balance between folks who were interested in labor issues and folks who were interested more in management issues. And it was really getting skewed more toward human resource management. The other issue, which was really not a problem, but it was more, I think, a change in student demographics, were that we had more and more students applying to the program from countries outside the U.S., particularly Asian countries. And so there, one thing that was really interesting was that there was more interest in global issues and
mm-hmm.
In international concerns. Related to that, though, was that there was not money to support these students. If industrial relations were a program like, say, the math department,
right.
There are lots and lots of undergrads who have to take trigonometry or calculus
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and math can hire people,
right.
hire graduate students to work as TAs and support them while they're working on a PhD. by allowing them mm-hmm. to teach introductory courses. Since industrial relations is a grad program only, there are no undergrads for TAs to teach. So the Institute was not in a position to offer assistantships to students. And it was very difficult to support these students who were coming mm-hmm. from overseas, who had to pay out-of-state tuition.
Yeah.
And in some cases, Wisconsin lost some very good students because the Institute was not able to fund them. I think that other programs, other industrial relations programs, have strong ties to the business community. For instance, Illinois, I believe, has a Motorola scholarship and a you know, there might be Exxon money coming in mm-hmm. or a lot of money coming in from large companies, and the students get the money that comes from that corporation. Wisconsin, I think, has always worked hard to keep itself independent from those mm-hmm. corporations because the faculty didn't want to be in a position of perhaps modifying curriculum according to business interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so the IRI had not courted that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the result was that we would often end up losing students to other schools that could give them
mm-hmm.
corporate scholarships, and we weren't in a position to.
Were we able to get money for students from the grad school?
Some.
Okay, we were in line for that money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are university fellowships
yes.
that are typically given to the top 2% of
mm-hmm.
applicants, and I feel proud of the fact that every time we nominated somebody
yeah.
for a fellowship, we got it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the student would decide to go elsewhere anyway because it was just a fellowship for the first
right.
year. But we did a good job of persuading
mm-hmm.
the graduate school that the students who had applied to Wisconsin were very strong
mm-hmm.
And promising.
Your point about the decline of interest in collective bargaining mm-hmm. is interesting because back in the 70s, there was a manpower focus as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of money, and Jerry Summers was very good at getting money. And a lot of students were doing evaluation of manpower programs, et cetera. But then mm-hmm. the Reagan administration, that money all went down the tube.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically we had, you know, a labor econ course but and a seminar that kept on. But increasingly, you know, you shifted with the student interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had really three tracks, or maybe four, and then we were down to basically one, HR,
mm-hmm.
which used to be called personnel, of course.
Right. Well, the program itself still maintains the four core
mm-hmm.
areas.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who gets a master's degree in industrial relations has to take a course in labor econ, a course in
right.
international comparative IR, one in unions and collective bargaining, and one in human resource management. Everybody also has to take a course in IR theory and
mm-hmm.
two courses in research methods and stats. So there's that grounding
yep.
there, but in so and there are those seven required courses, but the other six courses
mm-hmm.
that students take to fulfill the master's degree always, well not always, but in many cases students are taking those courses in the Department of Management in the business school.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these were the big issues that seemed to be looming
mm-hmm.
when you took the job. As I recall, we made some effort to try to get tenure status, another effort,
mm-hmm.
probably while Paula was still here. Were you involved in that or not?
That I don't recall. I remember when Peter Speer, who was the associate dean at the time, left and went to Colorado,
mm-hmm.
Marianne Fitzpatrick
mm-hmm.
took over as associate dean in the social sciences. Paula sent a huge packet of information to Mary Ann and asked me if I would write a brief history of the Institute to send to her to kind of get her up to speed on what was going on with the Institute. And I remember writing that 2 or 3 page summary of the Institute. I don't recall offhand if there was a request for tenure at that point. There was later on when we tried to get a permanent director, and there was a nationwide recruiting effort, and that was in 2002.
So then, from the time you arrived until 2002, we were just kind of going along at normal speed, and Paula was leaving, and Craig came, etc. And we were in a, I guess, kind of defensive position, really.
Defensive position.
Well, in the sense that we were, no further efforts were being made to get tenure granting status, and it's understandable with the high turnover of directors. Well, and part of this goes back to what happened before you were you arrived. Previous efforts to get tenure granting status, the most recent of which I think was probably a year or two before you came.
Possibly, yeah, Barbara might know about that.
Yeah, and when I go through my records, I might be able to find that. So, from 1996, now weren't you gone some part of
that? I was gone.
You were gone for a year or so.
I left in 99 and came back in 2000. I was gone for almost exactly a year.
Right.
And while I was gone, Ruth Robarts was the administrative director, and she's now assistant dean in the law school.
Right. Right, yeah. Okay, so let's go over to 2002, and can you explain what was going on then?
Well, actually, I should say this started in 2000, in the 2000-2001 academic year when Herb Heinemann was the assistant, was the director. There was a recruiting effort, and actually I think there had been one the previous year when Craig was still here. There was an effort to bring somebody from North Carolina whose name was Arna Kalleberg, I think.
Yes, right, yes.
And
right.
I was not, that was right. That was the year I was gone, but there was a failed search that year because he was offered the position and ended up declining. Then when Herb came on as interim director, another search started, and an offer was made to Adrian Eaton, who is a professor at Rutgers University. And my memory of things is that it took a long time to get an official offer letter to her, and it ended up not going out in spring of 2001. And even though Adrian had tenure at Rutgers, she needed to go through the tenure process at Wisconsin. But the divisional committee that would have read her publications and made a recommendation about her tenure was not going to meet over the summer. Their last meeting was either April or May of 2001. So Adrian couldn't come in fall of 2001. So John Witte took over as interim director, thinking that he would just be here for a few months and that things would get settled with Adrian and she would then take over. And as I recall, the Social Studies Divisional Committee was going to have its first meeting in October of 2001. So we got her publications, and John Witte wrote a long letter arguing for her tenure, And there were two issues that needed to be dealt with. One was that she needed to have tenure on this campus, and the second was that she needed to have a tenure home. Since Adrienne's PhD is in industrial relations, and in fact she earned it at this university, and IR is not a tenure granting unit, she had to have tenure elsewhere. But sociology wasn't exactly right, and econ wasn't exactly right, and business wasn't exactly right, so there were some questions about where her tenure home would be. And a request was made to the university committee to treat her as a special case and let her have tenure in IR. There was a precedent for that because that had been done in the Women's Studies program, which is also an interdisciplinary program. Hmm. Excuse me. And in most cases, faculty who teach in Women's Studies have a tenure home in English or French or history or wherever. But somebody had come here who wanted tenure in Women's Studies, and so the university committee agreed that person could be treated as a special case and have tenure in that program. And so IR, with that as a precedent, wanted to make a case that Adrienne should have tenure in industrial relations. And so there were these two questions that needed to be answered, and the Social Studies Divisional Committee needed to make a decision or make a recommendation about Adrienne's tenure, and the University Committee needed to make a decision about whether she could, if she were awarded tenure, that they could be NIR. And then there were questions about which decision should be made first. Should the university committee decide whether she could have tenure in IR, and if they could, then give her stuff to the Social Studies Committee, or should they decide whether she was tenurable first and then move it on to the university committee? And I don't remember the details of what happened, but I remember that this was bandied about, that who should do what first. And it seemed like there was a lot of foot dragging. And Adrienne, initially we were hoping everything would get resolved in fall of 2001. Adrienne is married and has three children who are fairly young. I think they're in elementary school, maybe even younger, maybe nursery school. And if everything had been taken care of in the fall, that would have meant for her selling her house, pulling her kids out of school, moving from New Jersey to Wisconsin in the dead of winter. And so she then said, would it be okay if I started July 1 of 2002 instead of coming in January? So John Witte agreed to stay on as interim director for another 6 months, and we were all hoping that this would get taken care of. I believe Adrienne had been told that if she came on as director, that she would be able to hire, and that there would be two FTEs, which would have meant four half-time faculty for industrial relations. And that was important because the program really needed to be built up. We had been limping along for quite some time using lecturers to teach courses. And the program really needed faculty who were committed to the Institute. And so it was very important if Adrienne was going to come here and turn this place around and really help it to thrive. She needed to be able to hire those people. And I believe she and I believe she and John Witte had talked about actually starting the recruiting process while she was still at Rutgers, assuming all these decisions had been made in the affirmative in the fall, in the spring, right. She would be able to start recruiting, even though she wasn't physically mm-hmm. present. She and John would collaborate on this, and then when there were on-campus interviews, she would fly in and mm-hmm. and get going on things, because if she waited until 2004,
right.
then it would be another year down the road before any new faculty mm-hmm. could get on board. And at some point, somebody in LNS, I believe, said no, she should not be doing any recruiting until she was actually here, that everything should wait until she actually was here on campus and was the director. Then, and I'm not sure exactly the sequence of things. So I may be saying things a little
sure.
bit out of chronological order. But my memory is that the divisional committee that was supposed to be recommending Adrian's tenure, some of the members of the committee were not there at the time when they were discussing mm-hmm. Adrian's publications. And the people who were there were split in terms of deciding whether to grant tenure or not. And the chair of the committee did not want to, either could not or would not, and I'm not sure which, come down on one mm-hmm. side or the other. So there was this split decision, and the chair then told John Witte that he thought Phil Certain should decide. And Phil said, no, this has happened in the past, that a divisional committee mm-hmm. has had a split vote, and I've never cast the deciding vote, yep. and I don't want to do that mm-hmm. now. And so the recommendation was that John should go back to the committee and make a case mm-hmm. for on Adrian's behalf. Mm-hmm. And if you interview John, he could probably tell you
sure.
the details all this. Mm-hmm. And I should say, too, that this is all what I know secondhand.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I was not
sure.
privy to these conversations,
mm-hmm.
but this was what was reported
mm-hmm.
to me that
mm-hmm.
happened. And there was also some conversation about John and I believe Jonathan Zeitlin going to the university committee and making a case that if Adrian were granted tenure that she'd be allowed to have tenure in IR. And while all this was going on, and I believe, you know, John Witte was going to be making, you know, meeting with the Social Science Committee
mm-hmm.
and saying, would you please reconsider? And maybe hoping that these other folks who were supposed to be on the meeting, supposed to be at the meeting and didn't show up, that they would actually be there. And that might shift the vote as well. In the midst of all that, Adrian sent an email to John Witte and said, you know, I really need to know what's happening. By then, I think it was, maybe the third week of February.
Mm.
And it was very stressful to her and her husband and her kids
sure.
to not know what was going on. And I believe she was also under pressure from the folks at Rutgers to let them know whether she'd be staying or leaving. And she said, I need to know
mm-hmm.
by such and such a date what's going to happen. And I think that deadline was not met. And she subsequently withdrew her, her candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
And right around the time that happened, I believe, you know, that was probably the end of February or early March.
Of 2003?
Of 2002.
2002.
And it was right around that time that the state announced an enormous budget deficit. And the deans in LNS were facing an enormous budget shortfall, and at you know, almost simultaneously.
This is the second side of the tape interview with Charlotte. Okay.
Okay. I think that since those two things happened simultaneously, the budget shortfall and Adrian deciding not to come to Wisconsin after all, both of those factors were instrumental in the college's decision to close the institute.
It's interesting to think about what would have happened if they had resolved it and she had decided to come.
Yeah.
And then the shortfall, and then you'd never get these two slots or whatever.
Exactly. I think it would have been very difficult for her, because she would have come at a at a time where there were enormous economic constraints.
Yeah.
She probably would not have had had successful searches for those two FTEs, and there was a continuing problem of IR not having tenure granting authority. So even had there been even if the promise was kept to recruit for half-time faculty, it might have been very difficult to have successful searches, because they would have, as I said earlier, it's tough to find people who have an interest in industrial relations as well as expertise in a primary department.
Now, did the cluster hiring notion ever come up in connection with finding a director?
I don't know that it was in connection with finding a director. I would have to go back and look at those documents. There was a cluster hire proposal that was submitted to Chancellor Ward, and that was in the 2000-2001 year when Herb Hieneman was director. There might actually even have been two proposals, and I'd need to go back and look at my files and see what they were, but they were based on the premise that industrial relations is and always has been an interdisciplinary field, and IR was doing cluster hires, you know, before the term was in vogue.
Yes.
I know that Craig and Jonathan worked on one, and I don't remember who did the other one, but they focused on education and work, and I can't remember what the other one focused on. But our proposal was not. Neither of the proposals was selected.
Yeah, that's all been my impression. We've been doing this for years on a shoestring, really.
Yeah.
And if we'd had some real support, we could have done wonders.
Yeah.
But okay, the two cluster hire proposals were turned down. Adrian finally said no. And then the budget cuts came, and then they, in effect, said, we're closing IR shortly afterwards.
Yeah, this was in March or April of 2002. By that point, Marianne Fitzpatrick's tenure as associate dean was up, and Chuck Hallaby took over as associate dean. And he told John Witte that the institute was going to be closed down, and initially we were told that students who had been admitted for fall of 2002 were not going to be allowed to come. And we were concerned that there may have been a legal obligation, and if not a legal obligation, there was certainly an ethical obligation mm-hmm. to allow students to come here after we had written to them and said they'd been admitted. They may well have turned down offers from other mm-hmm. schools, and those schools in turn would have admitted other mm-hmm. students who were on their waiting lists. And John talked with Chuck about that, and you know, said we really feel yeah. An obligation to these folks, and so then that decision was reversed, and we were allowed mm-hmm. To admit or to let all those people come. Although they did all receive a letter saying mm-hmm. that the institute would, in all likelihood, close in May of 2004 when they graduated, mm-hmm. and that nobody was certain what exactly was going to happen with the institute, but it looked like they would be the last class admitted. Mm-hmm. And a couple of people, I want to say maybe one or two students, decided not to come after all, but mm-hmm. everybody else who had been admitted mm-hmm. decided to come. Good. And so we had a fairly good-sized class, and were able to give some money to folks.
Yeah.
And
how big a class was it?
Oh, gosh.
Roughly.
I want to say between 15 and 20,
oh, mm-hmm.
but I could be a little
yeah.
off.
Oh. Close to the mark.
So we had mm-hmm. classes to mm-hmm. offer them mm-hmm. and financial aid for some of them mm-hmm. and kept things going for,
yeah.
for 2 years.
Right. Now, was there a Barbash fund? I may have asked you this, you know, last week or so. Somebody mentioned to me, Barry Gerhardt,
mm-hmm.
said, was there a Barbash fund? And because I was talking to him after talking to Mike Enyard over at the business school, maybe buying mm-hmm. some database with some of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And since Mike was going away, he asked Barry to respond. And then Barry's initial response was, well, was there still money in a Barbash fund?
Mm.
And I've never heard of it before, but on the other hand, I can, you know, maybe mm. Kitty gave some money mm. when Jack died.
I think that, oh, this was
but
before
this
I came. It might have been while Sally was
yeah.
In my position or while Barbara was. I believe that after Jack Barbash died, the alumni perhaps started a fund
oh, yeah.
in his name.
Mm-hmm.
That
could be why Barry might have
yeah.
mentioned it, because he was here at the time,
yeah.
or shortly after Jack
yeah.
died.
Well, I do know that Kitty yeah. Barbash gave some money to the institute, and this was when Paula was still here, and I don't recall exactly how much it was,
mm-hmm.
but there was a generous donation from Kitty Barbash
mm-hmm.
that may have been used for PAs
yeah,
or for
sure.
computers for the lab or
yeah.
something like
right.
that. But that was some, and I don't know if that money went into the Barbash fund or if that was separate, but
mm-hmm.
I do remember
mm-hmm.
that she donated some money as
yeah.
well.
So, okay, given the fact that the institute was closed down, what have you done? I mean, what's been your role in the last 2 years? I assume holding hands with students and so reassuring.
Yeah, some listening to students.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the students, more so the PhD students than the master's students, have been upset by
mm-hmm.
the fact that the institute is closing. The people who have come here from overseas And that's most of the PhD students. I think right now we've got about 10 PhD students, and two of them are domestic and the other eight are international. And the PhD students have invested thousands of dollars and years of their lives to work on a degree. And in many cases, in countries like Korea, for instance, industrial relations is a booming field.
Yeah.
And especially since the Asian financial crisis in 1997, things have changed markedly.
Mm-hmm.
And those countries are very keen to have scholars in industrial relations. So where labor unions are sort of diminishing in the U.S., they're on the rise in some other countries, and it was important to a lot of these doctoral students to be able to finish their degree and go back home and make a contribution to improving people's lives in their home country. And so it was very upsetting to them that the Institute was closing and that the field of study that they had committed themselves to was seen as not particularly important by the university. And it was also hard for them because when they go home, it would be nice to continue to have ties to their old grad program and to be able in the future to come back here as a visiting scholar, as many of them have done, many of the former students have done. So they were pretty disheartened about the fact that the program itself was folding and that the field itself seemed to be not valued. And I think that is not, that's not just happening at Wisconsin. It's
true.
Happening in many places. I know that Berkeley's program has lost funding.
Mm-hmm.
I was just chatting today with somebody in the School for Workers who said that other labor ed programs are losing funding, that things are just
really?
being cut all over. So it's not peculiar to Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. That might be something to develop a bit in the history where we plan to rework.
The written history you're talking about. Yeah,
right. That what's the general status of IR nationally as well. Yeah, and UCLA has been cut, both UCLA and Berkeley, and I haven't really followed it, but I'm sure others have too, as probably John Lund knows.
Yeah, well, I think in many schools, because as I said before, more and more people are going into human resource management, a lot of IR programs are actually housed in business schools.
Yes.
And this program is one of the few that that wasn't. I lost my train of thought. It may be that the programs are getting cut are the ones that are not affiliated with business schools.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that. That's speculation on my part.
Right. Well, we went through this process 10, 15 years ago. What should the Institute be called? Should we change the name or not? We decided ultimately not to change it because we had a distinctive quality here that, and we would have seemed more like a business school operation if we had used HR in the title.
Right.
Yeah. What other groups? What about the alumni group? What's been their sentiment, or what expressions have you heard from them about the closing?
I think some disappointment, sadness, in a couple of cases, outrage. I think for people who have had very successful, productive, happy careers, and who feel that they owe their careers to the degree they got here, it was a sad moment.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause and also for people who were here maybe in the 70s and 80s when the Institute was in its heyday.
Right, yes.
It was just astonishing to them. They couldn't believe mm-hmm. that the place would close down because it had been so vital and mm-hmm. successful and large. So there was some surprise and some sadness
mm-hmm.
and I owe my career to IR
yeah.
and
yeah.
and this and there were other people my guess is probably emeritus faculty and people who got PhDs here rather than the people who got the professional master's degree
mm-hmm.
Who were more concerned about the intellectual tradition and the rich history that
mm-hmm.
that IR embodies and the Wisconsin School of Economics and
mm-hmm.
all of the things that started here
mm-hmm.
and the work that IR faculty did in terms of Social Security and all of those things,
yeah.
they just couldn't believe that
yeah.
there was this place that had this
mm-hmm.
wonderful intellectual foundation
right.
and had contributed so much to U.S. culture
mm-hmm. yeah.
was going to be disappearing.
Yeah, and it's sad in economics as well. We had real strength 10, 15 years ago in public policy and labor economics and so on. And now that's pretty well gone. Departments changed very dramatically.
Mm.
And maybe it's, they may think that they're more like what we thought we once were. But looking at it from my vantage point, and I think others, it's changed and we've given up. It's like giving up a trademark or a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's gone, you can't put it back together again. And so here, yes, we've given up a real strength of the university, it seems to me. On the other hand, you have to, the world does change. And
right.
it's always hard to separate that.
Mm. Well, I know all fields change.
Yes.
The English department now is very different from the way it was in the late 70s and early 80s when I was a PhD student there. People are studying different things, they're writing different kinds
yep.
of things, and
yes.
it just shifts focus,
yep.
it goes
right.
off in a new direction.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding from talking with people is that the folks in econ were more interested in econometrics and game theory
mm-hmm.
and things other than institutional
right.
economics.
Right.
And it was those former labor economists who were interested in institutional economics who got this place started.
Right.
And when they retired or died or went elsewhere, there was nobody in econ to
right.
take their place. There are a few people now in economic sociology. Joel Rogers and
mm-hmm.
Jonathan Zeitlin, Mike Handel, who are interested in IR kinds of things. But there was not a huge groundswell of
yep.
support
right.
for industrial relations among the social science faculty in L&S. And I think that if there had been people from econ, soc, poli sci, history, wherever,
yeah.
who
right.
were coming along
right.
and saying, this is an intellectual project that we're committed to, and mm-hmm. this is research we want to do, and these are students whom we want to mentor, LNS would probably have backpedaled and said, yes, we'll continue to support you.
Mm-hmm.
But there were the as years went on, the people who were really interested in industrial relations were the people from management and the people from the School for Workers.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people from LNS
right.
were saying, you know, we want to teach for you, we want to direct your students' dissertations, and so on. And so I think it did not make sense to the college to continue to financially
sure.
support
mm-hmm.
A program that college faculty were not committed to.
Yeah. Now, there was an effort on at the regent level to, at least mm-hmm. it came up as I recall,
mm-hmm.
maybe last December, was it?
Yeah.
And the regent with an Hispanic name, I'm not sure who.
I don't, it was somebody new, I think.
Yeah,
somebody
quite new.
Right. Who had been appointed to the board.
Right. And apparently it's, I don't know whether you brought it up in new business or what, but mm-hmm. I recall reading something in the paper about that, and he made a plea for it, but I think mm-hmm. Peter Speer maybe said the budget cuts, et cetera, and, you know, he made no progress at all.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know anything more about that?
I don't
that,
know
yeah.
the details.
I should
about
probably
that.
Try to get the regent minutes and have a look at it. Somebody
yeah.
told me that this fellow's son had been a student here in the program. Solace, maybe, but it did not ring a bell with me, and so
the name doesn't sound
yeah,
familiar.
Yeah.
If he was a student, it's not while I was here.
Yes, right.
So
there, a little support here and there, but not enough to make a critical mass.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There were conversations about moving the institute administratively
oh, yes.
to La Follette
mm-hmm.
because La Follette is a school now and
right.
does have tenure granting authority.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one possibility that I think John Witte brought up with his colleagues there. Some of them were very much in favor of it. Some of them had cold feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that again, you should probably talk with John about
yes.
this, but my sense of things is that nobody wanted to make a decision quickly.
Sure, right.
And John wasn't about to be pushing
yeah.
things. There was also some conversation about moving the institute to the business school. And I'm not sure exactly what happened with that, but I know that those were the two options
mm-hmm.
that were considered in terms of maintaining it
right.
and in its in its present form in terms of degree requirements
right.
and so on, but moving it out of LNS administratively
mm-hmm.
and having it go elsewhere. The other possibility that was, I think, not even considered was having it be part of intercollege programs as environmental studies is.
Oh, yes. Right.
And which intellectually made sense to me because IR is connected to engineering,
right.
econ, or engineering, education, law,
right.
ag, everybody,
right.
and so
yeah.
intercollege seemed an appropriate place, but for various reasons
yeah.
that was never pursued.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't make sense to move it to the School for Workers because that's part of extension and they
that's
can't
right.
give degrees.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Interestingly enough, back in 1985 or so, when this LNS Review Committee said you should have tenure granting authority, I was negotiating with Dave Cronin, and he was agreeable about taking it up to the next level to the vice chancellor, but said that at that time they were trying to disentangle problems with IES, which had been giving degrees but didn't have the authority to give them, or had been granting tenure to people but did not. So they wanted to get that kind of unraveled first. Well, then we were able to hire Strack, yes, and this young guy in history department, and Craig we had just hired, and so the pressure was off in a way. And but anyway, that was a crucial moment, I think, when I didn't feel I could just say, well, you got to take it up there, because if Dean says no, this is not the right time. But of course then quickly probably forgot about it and never found out when we could have tried to make the pitch. So, all very sad. So, I guess I, at the moment, run out of questions. But why don't we quit for now, and let me think some more, and you may have some other ideas. And since you're going to be around a little longer now, it's not critical that we get it done this week. But you've been very helpful.
Well, good.
Very clear explanations, and your memories of the dates is very, very good. Okay, well, thank you very much, Charlotte, and look forward to incorporating some of this into this history that I'll be working on, and hopefully maybe I can get you to take a look at it from time to time as we make sure it's all okay.
Okay.
All right, good. Thank you very much.